Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo.
And our producer is Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
So we were talking about something right before we started Weird Things, which was picking up the phone, not picking up the phone, filtering phone calls, doing all this sort of stuff. And that becomes increasingly a problem because, like, if I see it's my friend calling, I pick up the phone. If I don't recognize the number, I don't. The exception is, like, sometimes if I'm waiting for a call from, let's say, you know, like one of my agents or something like that,
and the number looks big. I am getting a spam phone call right now because it has the same prefix as mine. You want me to take it?
Sure.
Hello.
Hi, this is Greg. I'm calling from the Healthcare Enrollment Center in regards to your inquiry for health insurance. So we know there's been a lot of confusion with all the changes happening.
And then off it goes.
Not even a person.
Jesus. Like, why every day? It's that all day, every day. It's never money.
I've said before, and sometimes it's worse and sometimes it's better, but, like, there are times where I think phones are just corrupted tech. Like, I should just find different ways for my friends and family that call me to figure out a way to do it.
Part of the problem is it's a problem, but it's a profit center for phone companies, you know, and it's like mail. It's like you open up your mailbox, you get all this junk mail. Who delivered this to you? Well, the government, you know, because it helps pay for the rest of the mail, you know, I guess. But it's like maybe raise the cost of the rest of the mail and problem solved. I don't know. But then there's going to be fewer jobs, fewer this. And it's like, all right, it's one of these things like there's a lot of inconvenience here, that maybe we can do without.
Well, a lot of it comes from the fact that all these robocall centers are using number spoofing, which is why they make it look like it's your same phone number, or sorry, your same zip code or area code, or your actual phone number. I've gotten plenty
that
are
like... You got a call from yourself?
Well, not from myself, but it's like 6 of the 7 digits are my own phone number.
Yeah.
And that makes it a trouble. So, like, I use Mr. Number to, like, kind of try to weed out scam and fraud phone calls.
For those who don't know, what's Mr. Number?
It's one of those apps that plugs into the iPhone, like, operating system. It's on the App Store. And they have a database of, like, hey, these are numbers that are usually frauds. And it checks other numbers and stuff. There's a lot of different ones out there. But the problem is that with the phone spoofing that these services do, they look like legitimate phone numbers. They are legitimate phone numbers. And if you try to call them back, you'll probably get a person on the other end who's confused and doesn't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Because they've just been able to make it up. You know, and that's where a lot of the problem comes in, is that there's literally no way to block that until you turn off that technology.
Yeah.
And it's a solvable thing that could be solved from the way they tell. And you've heard these explanations like, well, no, the problem is like, no, it's a solvable problem. But it's a profit center. You know, it's a big profit center for them to do those. And that's, you know, it would be a solved problem if they were losing money from it. It's kind of all the more reason. It's like, yeah, like I love iChat. I use that a lot. You know, and every now and then, you know, I get something go spoof, but it's really, really hard and expensive to try to send spoof iChats. You can send SMS to go through, but, you know, blue bubbles versus green bubbles. You know, I filter my email. I go through that. One of the advices I gave to a friend who just started a company was go to Google Voice, get a free number from Google Voice. If you load Google Voice for your iPhone or your Android, you can get a free phone number, and then you can just use that. And when you give phone numbers out, just use that number. And that gives you a tremendous amount of control. And then people, your closer friends, like having those two different numbers is super helpful. So that was my advice I was going to say before the show.
Yeah. I don't know though. So as far as an After Things question, especially when you get started, all you want is to be as available as possible for anyone interested in whatever your entrepreneurial thing is. You want that phone to ring, and you want it to be possible money on the other side. When do you make the call to make yourself less available? I guess that's the bigger question.
And you are very willing to pan for gold. Like, if somebody kind of accidentally hears about you, but you have a chance to kind of talk them into the tent, like, fine, cool, great. Let me just get me on the phone with anybody. Get me emailing. Get me in contact with literally anybody that can do literally anything for me.
Well, the first is, like, I advise, like, doing a separate number because it doesn't limit the number of people that get to you. It just makes it easier for you to control that and to know, oh, this is coming from my business number. This is my personal number. Or you're like, hey, it's my business number and I know who I gave this out to. That's fine. I think the answer is sort of, we talked about this before, like, when do I go pro as a magician? When you're booked so much that it interferes with your day job. You know, when you're like, man, I have to turn down paid gigs, you know, so I can do the thing that doesn't pay as much or isn't as, you know, long-term lucrative. I think it's the same thing with this. It's like, you reach a point where you're like, man, more people are trying to get a hold of me than I can handle. And then you're like, now I'm going to filter.
Yeah, that's part of why, I still keep my toll-free number. I, when they opened up the 866 exchanges almost 20 years ago, wow, I think it was 2001, 2002, I nabbed 866-4-MAGIC-4 and 866-EAT-FIRE. And now, for a while, I just had them all forward to my cell phone. But now I've had to construct a phone maze for people to go through to sort of weed out, who's calling just, you know, like, oh my gosh, is this really Brian Brushwood versus, hi, we're Proctors in Schenectady, New York. We'd like to book you for a performing arts stage show. I think there's still value to having those. And because actually the credit card stopped charging on them and I had to decide, well, do I just want to let him go? Why? I mean, you know, who does a toll-free thing? But ultimately, I decided, you know, if it's $22 a month and it, you know, gives a... I realized if I didn't have those, then people would just figure out my real cell phone number and call that directly, and I would have fewer filtering mechanisms.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that extra hoop somebody has to go through is always... It's a filter that drops off a lot of people. It's like, my philosophy is like, I'm easy to reach. My attention is hard to catch.
Correct.
You know, that's so it's like, yeah, I'm, you know, my email, it's out there, andrew@andermain.com. You know, like I'm out there. You know, I'm not hard to reach. I just, if I go check, you know, my 30, 40 email messages in the morning and I see this, like, I'll try to remember to get back to this. If I don't, I don't. And I know that's their people I try to get a hold of that they don't respond and I don't get upset. I'm like, I get it. It's not a personal thing. It's like, you know, you don't know what happened is how, you know, how inundated people are. And you go through periods where all of a sudden every phone call you had made, you know, in the past year comes through in 2 weeks of people getting back to you. And
yeah,
now you got a triage. So, but again, my advice is if you want, go to use a Google Voice, get one of those free phone numbers to start with. It's a great way to filter stuff. It's a great way to, you know, put that out there. It lets you kind of control, and then it lets you know where the calls are coming from. And you can do cool things with it, have it automatically go to voicemail, et cetera. That's step number one. But yeah, my phone's always on silent. My phone does not ring. You know, my phone vibrates and that's it. I put it by my bed when I go to, I charge it. And then when I go to sleep at night, I put it right on my nightstand, right next to my head. Because in the morning, you know, I have an agent on the East Coast. I'm going to get calls there. I'll look and I'll check, you know, and then ignore them. I had a call that I thought was coming through somebody there and it wasn't. It was another spam this morning. I'm like, rah.
Yeah, that was, man, I remember the only time I really been gotten by that spam was right when the Kickstarter was happening and we were like doing, you know, a lot of press outreach and everything. And it was like the day that it launched, like all of a sudden there was, I think I might have still been at Nurtacular too. I get a phone number and it was from LA or New York and I forget which one. But I'm like, oh, I got media. And I like, jumped up and ran away, and I'm like, I got, hello. We've just been informed that you don't have health care. If you would like health care, press one.
It's always there.
I mean, it is the health care market for whatever reason is the one that just insane robocalls. Insane.
Well, it's the high, if you get somebody to switch a plan, whatever the payoff, it's such a high, you know, whenever there's that. You know, if you're getting somebody to commit to thousands of dollars a year in payments, the percentage for getting that customer is a lot. 29. It is January 29th. 29 days since I went into Facebook.
I am proud of you. And I guess I got invited to the Whiskey Tribe Facebook group, and they actually made a whole scene of mocking me for not responding to the invitation. So I made like my one token appearance on Facebook for the month. And I outside of that, I don't think I've logged into Facebook intentionally for 2 or 3 months now.
Man, I check Facebook probably once a day, and it is just a fruitless experience almost every time. And part of it has been looking to spread further with like the politics content and love or hate Facebook. There's one thing that gets attention, and that is talking about politics, and that's something that I'm moving more and more into. But oh Christ on a cracker, is it just 9 alerts, 8 of which I have no idea what is going on. Then a bunch of things that are disguised to look like alerts that are there to honeypot me to make more moves that will surely bring me more alerts. 19,000 groups that I've been added to without taking any action. And then, of course, there's just Facebook Messenger, which on one hand, I think is a very, very good product. I would like to use it if it were not connected to Facebook, where it is just another way that people can get in touch. And sometimes it's good, but sometimes it's bad. Oh, also, God forbid you want to add somebody, because now not only do you add them, you also get another alert in Facebook Messenger letting you know that indeed you are now connected with this person you just liked on Facebook and Facebook Messenger.
And what's funny is Facebook is phenomenally bad on all sides of the equation. I don't enjoy it as a consumer because it's too noisy and too grabby of my attention. I don't like it as a producer because they hold my own contacts hostage and demand cash to reach them. They have shown themselves, like, I fell for every one of Facebook's early moves. Facebook new platform. Great, let's go ahead and do it. Let's start building up followers. Oh, you hit a maximum of 5,000. Too bad for you. And I was like, well, crap, what am I going to do? I guess I have to start unfriending some people. And they're like, wait, we're here to save the day. For no charge, we're going to flip you over to a business account, which is a magical thing. We'll take all your contacts, and now you'll be able to reach them through the business account. Great. So I did that, and then got up to like eventually 36,000 likes or whatever. But shortly after doing that, they turn around and they're like, oh, psych, you shouldn't have done that. You should have just stayed an individual because now you can follow individuals. And I'm like, well, can I go back? And they're like, nope, just start a new individual account. And then on top of that, they start charging to reach your own people. And I just, there's no aspect of Facebook that provides any value or does anything good. I think it's a cancerous, repugnant, walled garden cesspool that is a time waster. And I'm sure somebody out there has made money. Go ahead.
Can I ask? So all of that, yes, right? It sucks if you are making stuff and you're trying to get the word out.
Right.
I am in a similar boat where I don't use Facebook very much. I maybe go on it once or twice a day to see if for some reason I've been tagged in something.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't post much to it socially. Like, I never post to it to try to get the word out about anything that I'm doing because I know that I don't use it enough for that to be anything. But do you guys actually use it in a familial sense? Like, as a social network?
There's a cross section of my life that only does Facebook.
Right.
Like, I know if I want to get to the people that didn't get on the rest of the tech revolution, they got on Facebook.
Because
like my family, yeah, my friends who aren't tech people, like, that's where if I want to share something that I like want my friends and family to know, it's the only place I would post stuff like that.
I know this is not a nail in, you know, a solution really to much of the discussion, but that I think is where Facebook continues to, like, it is for people to talk about all of their like interpersonal stuff. I think Facebook has gotten a lot better about showing me that stuff versus like, you know, here's a video of someone making an omelet that looks like Bane from Batman.
Yeah. That was my favorite Bane omelet video.
Or like, hey, here's the very first thing on your timeline is an ad for like Harry's Razors. And it's like, well, can you show me something real first?
Like, take me to dinner first. Jesus.
I mean, I think as creators, Facebook is tough because Facebook is trying to stem the exact same tide that we're having as people who want to use Facebook as maybe both types of platforms, but they're having to deal with that with the people who are just using it, you know, as an everyday non-creator type of an account. You know, I think it's tough.
There are people for whom do well with it. You know, I mean, Andrew, I assume, I don't know if all of us are following, but there was a guy, nice guy by the name of Rick Lax that, you know, back in the day with iTrix, you know, we used to do interviews with him every once in a while. Like, he wrote a couple books. He's a cool dude. Started doing these videos on Facebook at a Starbucks with like a webcam, doing webcam magic, basically. And now, oh my God, he just launched another account that's basically just him slapping his logo on other viral videos on Facebook, and it is my entire feed right now. Like, is all just either Rick, he has a series where he's like scamming his landlord out of rent by doing, you know, scams and magic tricks and stuff like that, or it's a bunch of other videos that has like Rick Lax has friends at the bottom where it's like, you know, hit whatever it needs to be for virality success.
And I've been missing all this.
if you have not seen it, and this is no dick on Rick, who's a good guy, but like, it's fine. you're living a more productive life.
I like Rick. Rick is sometimes his own worst enemy in some ways, but he is very, very, when he gets onto something, he really pursues it full speed.
Super hard work.
Yeah, absolutely hard. I respect that. And it's like, yeah, there is a thing. People are doing a thing. And it's great. There's a thing. And you know, I did Facebook live chats for a while, and then Facebook started playing around with how the algorithms worked and all this. And I'm like, I hate this. I'll use this tentatively, but I don't trust Facebook. Like, yep, don't trust Facebook. You know, and it was like, this is why I don't like it. And they always do something that's, again, they have a business, they have a right to exist, they do what it does. I feel far more productive because I don't go on there. You know, I remember when they had Messenger was part of Facebook, the Facebook app, and I used the Messenger a little bit, and they split it off into its own separate thing. And I'm like, no, I liked it when I can go in, I could check up on, you know, what was going on at the feed and check my messages. Now you're trying to separate this to make me go into messages too and do this because it's another place to advertise. You're trying to increase the amount of my time you waste. You've made my time even more inefficient. I'm like, no, I'm done. That, and as Brian's pointed out, when we watched we were told to go to Pages, we go to Pages, and next thing you know, we're like, oh yeah, you have to pay to reach this. And I'm like, for one post to reach those people is an entire month of a MailChimp account.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, you just screwed me, Facebook. You just screwed me over. And I get frustrated because I'll deal with, you know, people I'm working with books and stuff to market. Like, oh, we want to do Facebook, Facebook this. I'm like, you're making your own job more difficult. You're making your own job more difficult by doing this. There are other ways. There are better routes to do this. I know you guys sit around with Facebook open all day and you think that's the world, but that's not the world. That's not really how things get moved as much. It's big platform to advertise. I've used it to advertise and it's worked out pretty well, but because there's a lot of captive people there, you know?
Yeah.
Snickers bars and would go really far in North Korea, you know?
I mean, I think that's the most agonizing part is, as done as I want to be with Facebook, I can't look you in the eye and say that there's not a good chance sometime this year I'm not going to spend $1,000 for the privilege of pretty please allow me to say a message to people who have already indicated they want to hear what I have to say.
But that's different. I mean, that's us saying that, yeah, there are all these suckers waiting there. And not that you're a sucker if you use Facebook. I mean, but it's just the idea from an advertising point of view. And I get it. And for some people, you know, my mom, people like this, like, yeah, they want to check this thing up. They, you know, retirees and stuff. What are you going to do? Go on Facebook. It's fine. You know, but if you're young and you're hungry, or you're just hungry and hardworking, it doesn't matter if you're young, if you're 70 and you're out there and you're eager to make a name for yourself and do stuff, the less time you spend trying to do that in Facebook, the better. And you know, bless Rick Lax and what he's doing, but how many YouTubers do you know, Brian, with a million followers who can't pay rent?
Oh, sure, sure. Well, and that's the challenging thing is because, you know, how do you monetize attention, you know? Attention is a valuable commodity, but only if you have a structure. And keep in mind, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to claim like I've solved it. I think we've made some smart steps here on the show. We, you know, figured out that Patreon is a way to take attention and figure out the top 10, 5, 2, even 1% of listeners who are so in love that they want to directly contribute. That's great. Advertising is another way, but of course you got stuff like the adpocalypse and so on. You've got many people build a platform so that they can sell a service. There are popular YouTube channels that are hilarious videos from air conditioner companies. And all they do is they play happy and they have a bunch of white people dancing. And it's like, oh, they're so delightfully awkward and friendly. Oh, and my AC is out. I should maybe call them. So figuring out to build a platform to get that works. And of course, with scam stuff and the Modern Rogue Shop, we're trying to sell products related to a particular lifestyle that we're trying to portray. Who I feel bad for are people who think they can get away with just being an artist. And I just want to do my thing and then be popular for that thing. And then have grownups make it turn into money.
And that, it's like, that was the promise. And even, you know, Colleen, our friend, who at that time was at Google and was at YouTube. She's like, look, this is the ideal. Let you do the thing, get the eyeballs. We're the most popular advertising platform. We will get you the money. That's the new ideal. I mean, that was not a popular myth. Like, that was the internal ideal.
And I always had a problem with that because I was always like, there's a finite size for the advertising budget that increases that people will spend and increases a little over a year and you get other people to advertise. You keep dividing that. And my argument, like, well, YouTube, and I pointed out, and I don't think this is maybe true now, but like up until like 2 years ago, CBS made more money on advertising than all of YouTube. People are like, oh, well, it's CBS. I'm like, no, look at how big YouTube is. You know, how many billions of hours of content, how many millions of people are creating content for it every day. And still one network, you know, and the huge ever expanding band of content out there still made more money on advertising. Okay. People Magazine, okay, you see this, oh, old print, print's dead, sort of, but in some people didn't get that memo. BuzzFeed, super, super popular, right? Okay, People Magazine makes more money in ad revenue than all of BuzzFeed. It's like, what does that tell you? It's like, oh, yeah, it's harder and harder and harder to make that money because it gets divided smaller and smaller, it gets automated and whatnot, which is fine. But the biggest problem is these environments where your attention is what's being sold. And I hate, like, you go to mainstream, like, I'm going to go to CNN, right? CNN's, you know, well-known brand. We've all heard of it. You know, you go to CNN and you're like, you know, there's your attention thing. All of the little, you know, the little pseudo ads and stuff that kind of come up there. And they've gotten better and worse about that. But you scroll right through to the Outbrain stuff, which blends right in with their articles, right in with the articles. Looks like this. It says paid content, but hey, how blockchain technology can impact the global oh, they cut off. I've got to see what they said. You know, it's this all this clickbaity stuff that's right in the middle of what they're doing.
And there you go. Right. In fact, I think right above it, too, we got pictures and everything.
Yeah. And this is what the reputation of this is. This is where they are now. You know, this is what we are. We're like, yeah, we know we will let these people mislead you because we got to pay we got to pay for, you know, putting out, you know, what we're doing. And, you know, getting into social media sites where it's absolutely the worst, you know, where whatever they're trying to do, like you see the constant ways they try to approach you because they think they have a read on you. And, oh, we're going to this thing Obama did will disgust you. You know, I'm like, not clicking, not getting
well,
any of that.
And that's I would, if there's a silver lining, I would like to believe it's that people are becoming more savvy to those easy triggers, those easy recipes. You know, a bunch of people when we first started doing the Modern Rogue, you know, some of the projects we were like, you guys make your videos too long and it's too much of you talking. What you should do is just shorten them, do them daily, blah, blah, blah. Be like the King of Random. And it's like, look, Grant's a great person and a good friend, and I'm super happy for all of his success. But in all respect, we understand that turd sandwiches are very popular. We understand that turd sandwiches get you trending and get you on the top of Reddit. We know the recipe for turd sandwiches. We're just not interested in making turd sandwiches. If you want turd sandwiches, literally look anywhere else on YouTube and you'll be happy to find them.
Yeah, I think the problem is it's like there's a point where you realize if you put work into something, you see reward, and you look around you at all the different things you could put work into. I mean, like, you know, when I was in my early 20s, you know, I had a friend that was an investment banker, and I used to talk to this guy about, you know, business stuff and all that. He's like, you know, if you want to get into this, you know, I'll help you, you know, like, you know, get your degree, whatever. I can get you set up at a firm, whatever. Cause I had an interest in business. I could talk about, I love talking about that. And I was like, huh. And I thought about this. I'm like, well, what do investment bankers make? And he laughed. He's like, don't worry, you'd be fine. You know, it was like the idea of, oh, I'd be a millionaire by the time I was 30 or whatever. And then I thought, like, oh, I'd have to get up at 4:30 in the morning, take a subway into Manhattan, you know, go work all day doing that, wear a suit, do this, you know, go through that routine and doing everything else they did. And I'm like, you know what? I like sleeping in. I like doing my thing. Money is not my motivation. And so people are like, oh, you should do this. I'm like, why? You'd make money. Like, I know how to make money, you know, and I want to make money doing the things I like, you know, not doing things that just because I'm trying to scam somebody or make get rich quick or whatever. And there are situations in life.
I say that lifestyle is bad because if you are an investment banker, you can support us at Patreon.
Yeah. Also, as long as we're making corrections, please let me make it clear that I was not calling Grant Thompson, the King of Random's content, a turd sandwich. Just that there are predictable algorithms that generate successful YouTube channels, and that's not what we wanted to do with the Modern Rogue.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Some people just want to do a thing. And I'm like, I just tell me where to go, connect the widgets, and I want to do that. Or I'm having fun. The process is more interesting. The outcome. That's fine. Everybody's got their own choices. So. A lot of times you get people like, oh, you should do this, whatever. Follow your passion. Figure out how to make it a business. Realize that nobody knows anything. And we'll be the first ones to tell you we don't know. We don't know anything. But you'll often see, oh, everybody's doing this. And it's like a lot of people don't know why something works or why it doesn't work. And that drives me crazy because, you know, like, oh, well, like this entrepreneur did this. Like, okay. What happened to the third business they started? Or like, oh, you know, I talked to this actor and this is what helped them get their career. I'm like, they don't know. They don't even know what it got them. You know, like, I mean, it's this, there are lessons to be learned, but sometimes the people who are in the middle of them don't know what it was. So.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's one of the
Facebook sucks.
Well, so as a consumer, did you have to wean yourself off the Facebook experience?
No, I mean, when I switched to a page right around, I did the A&E show. And I was getting to this point, too, where the problem is I had so much noise because in Magic before was people asking me questions and stuff that, like, it was one thing, hey, a quick question. But then, you know, I'd get these long, long emails and like, ah, can I be your apprentice? Can I be this? And all these sorts of things. And I want to be famous. I want you to and just all these sort of people asking for way more from me than I even know how to do or whatever. And I'm like, I just got in the habit of just not being able to respond to that. And then once I was on TV, you know, that increased 1,000-fold, you know, of just, I can't keep up with this.
The hardest decision is you want to believe that part of being a definition of a good person is I'll respond to everyone. I have an unlimited well of energy and caring about mentorship or whatever. But at some point you just have to shift your perspective and just see it as a river. And it's like, when it's time to take a drink, you can lean over and grab whatever, you know, a handful of water.
It's
everything else
I
just
love,
has to go.
I love like Periscope and Facebook Live when it doesn't suck. It's like, hey, I'm like, guys, here's my attention. You got my attention for a couple hours and I'll stick around as questions are go. I'm happy to do this, but then I got to go right and you need to go right. You know, these other people, a lot of these questions, people are like, oh, they're asking me for stuff. It's like, no, you need to go do the thing you need to do. Don't come to me. I can't tell you what the right path is. I don't know what it is for me. But
you know, that's actually in terms of an after things takeaway. Maybe that's what we should do is institutionalize office hours and just say this is the only time I make my attention available to the general public. If what you have is important, then it's worth you showing up during this time, you know, that is posted or whatever. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I try to do that sometimes if I can schedule my streams. Like, I'm in the middle of finishing a book, so I'm like, only one thing matters, that book. You know, there'd be a house across the street could be on fire. If I'm like, everybody out? Okay, I'm going to go back to writing. Yeah. It's just my mentality on that. But what I want to do after I get this done is I'm probably going to try to do something on Twitter and say, hey, I'm going to give away free, you know, 5 free 1-hour Skype sessions, you know, just, you know, whoever wants to talk about writing for an hour, I'll do this. It's not a business. It's just a thing. Like, I've been very lucky, very, very, very lucky what I've gotten. And I'd be happy to like do that. But also I like doing the live streams and stuff and the response is great. But yeah, I just, you know, the reason I got out of Facebook was, one is it was a time sink. The war with robots has already started. They have, and I am serious, they have engineered AI designed to capture your attention, watching how long it takes you to click on something and running a massive experiment to try to click it again. They've acknowledged playing with emotions and stuff, and now they know they have a problem because there's actually, Facebook is depressing people, and that's not where they wanted to go, but they knew that if you trigger certain emotions more, you would get more of a reaction, and that's a problem they're getting themselves into, is that they've made people depressed, but they want to go back in there. And well, where do you go when you're depressed? I go tell people on Facebook that I'm doing this. So it is a manipulative machine designed to get you to watch it and pay attention and click on advertisers so they can continue to make more money. Bless them. That's fine. This is the world I want to live in, where you're free to do that. But I, as an individual, and you as individuals, we have a choice. We have a choice. We can say, not today, Satan.
Well, and that's why I know we've, in our futurism segments, I've predicted this before, but it's like you're going to be able to subscribe to a level of attention curation. Basically, you're going to have, you know, you'll be able to ask Alexa or Cortana or Siri, where it's like, hey, starting now, I'm paying $10 a month. I only want to, these are my goals. I only want to experience things that take me towards those goals, and anything that feels like a distraction, please filter. I will pay you for the privilege to not see them.
Well, and you have to keep in mind, you get there by rewarding systems that do that. I love iOS and Apple. There's a lot of problems, things that drive me nuts, but I love my little iOS chat app. I love Messenger because, you know, iMessenger, because like, you know, Apple, because like, Apple makes their money selling you hardware and trying to provide you this distraction-free environment. Apple makes its brand is based upon the idea that, you know, we're not going to do that. People are like, oh, that's what they say. Look at their quarterly report. Look at where their profit margins are. It's there. You can see. Well, Look at the success that iAds wasn't. You know,
for me, I was listening to some hacker or privacy-based, like it was about serious privacy concerns about like political dissidents and stuff. And in the shorthand that they mentioned was, whatever it is you're doing, do it on iOS because it's safer and you're much, much less likely to get found out about whatever it is.
Yeah. And it's Google's an amazing company, but it, and to try to make it sort of break it down is that Apple makes its money with hardware that we could say you're paying a tax on the hardware because it costs a lot more and it pays for that and it subsidizes that. That's why you're paying that. You'd be, oh, the phones are so expensive. Yes, because they're not trying to make $20 a quarter off of you through advertising.
Right.
They're trying to make it through hardware. Okay. Google Home, or what's the Google Pod thing? Their own voice thing.
Google Home.
Yeah. So Google Home, they had a problem where there was the accidental, not an ad, but a friendly message about telling you what movies in theaters. But they had a problem where people were looking at and they saw that voice that they were able sending unencrypted back to Google was your voice commands and stuff. And every one of these, Siri does this. They all send your voice things back to a server because that's where the intelligent part works to figure that out. Apple encrypts that, like at each level, they de-anonymize it, right? So Apple anonymizes because Apple takes that stuff super, super serious. Google's thing wasn't doing it. And they're like, oh, we got to fix this.
Hey, it was like, hold on. I'm sorry. I'm getting a very important telephone call. Hold on. Hello. Yes.
Hello. Your Google listing may not be claimed or verified.
I swear to God.
So yeah, people using the name of Google to make money. So anyhow, it wasn't, they fixed it. But the point was, they didn't care. It was a low priority to them because the purpose of this thing was, you know, you know, it's an amazing device. People love it. But because they're the world's largest advertising company, you know, their market, their focus in their meetings, it's where they're incentivized to. That kind of security is, it's important, but not, you know, there. So just keep in mind. So you incentivize, whoever you incentivize is where you go. If you're going to services that are predominantly ad supported, marketing supported, whatever, that's going to be their priority in their relationship with you. If you go to services that are, you're paying for the service, then that is the service. And that's how, and that's hopefully what they're incentivized for. So anyhow, this might.
Well, my pick for After Things is Brian's Google listing.
I mean, apparently it's in disarray, guys. I don't know. I actually do have a pick if we can go into picks. I clicked on The King of Polka on Netflix, not having any idea what it was about, just knowing that it had Jack Black in it. First thing that pops up are the words, this really happened. And then I was enchanted from that point forward, knowing that it was a true story. And certainly I'm, you know, all kinds of liberties I'm sure were taken. But there's a moment in the credits where something so outrageous is happening that is like, I thought to myself, man, what if they showed the actual footage of, and then they at that moment flipped the switch, and as wild and as insane as this comedy movie was, the documentation at the end during the credits led me to believe that it's all pretty much on the nose. It was amazing. It's a lot of blast.
There's also a doc, and one of the cool things that Netflix does is when they have shows like that, like A Futile and Stupid Gestures, they try to get the documentary that goes along with it. They're the other one that sort of that. So there is a cool documentary really about the feature of that go. Jan Lewin. Yeah. So yeah. There's a documentary about him there. So cool.
So good. It's so much. I watched it twice. I watched it and then I made Bonnie watch it the next day.
Justin. You know, I would say my pick is Archer. We started watching after we finished American Vandal. We started watching Archer, which you know, just such a delight, a delight of a show in terms of like comedy writing. We started the Archer Vice season, which I've seen part of, but it's just God, so good, so funny.
Bryce.
Oh, I just watched. Oh, what is it? I just watched. I just watched something on Netflix.
that's Bryce's pick.
Netflix.com.
This new streaming service, Streamflix.
Oh, yeah, well, you know what? I'll say screw it because I can't remember that. I finished last night watching Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams on Amazon, and I really had a realization. That was at the very end of watching those 10 episodes is that I wasn't aware until I was done with it how many supernatural elements are a part of that universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having X amount of years of Black Mirror, you know, becoming a more, I don't know, prominent thing, that disconnection from reality was not an assumed element. I was done there. I'd be finished with an episode of Electric Dreams and thought, well, that's dumb. That's not a thing.
That's not possible.
That's yeah. This
whereas everything in Black Mirror has the veneer of you can see it around the corner technologically.
Right.
That
and. That's certainly a thing on me for like not being able to read that correctly, and it makes me want to go back and rewatch that the season of Electric Dreams, but it's really cool, and it's a lot of different. It's a huge range of sci-fi stories, from all outer space stuff to, you know, here and now, 2018. Stories with no high tech. There are some element. There are a couple episodes that have no high tech elements to them at all, and it's cool. It's a cool little thing that they did.
I I started watching part of the first one, and I'm like, man, they picked the most kind of cliche Philip K. Dick trope there is. You know, like, I'm in this identity. I'm in this. Wait, which identity am I kind of thing? Because, I mean, I love Philip K. Dick. I read a lot of his books, but I'm like, man, like, that's the most produced version of his stories have been, you know, Total Recall, et cetera, like that. And I was a little like, man, like, did you have to lead with this? Because, like, this is – you're not winning me over here, because like I kind of feel like I've seen this story a lot, but you know, from, you know, We Can Remember It Wholesale to reading it to being Total Recall, et cetera. Your observation about Black Mirror, like, I'll tell you, like, there is an episode in the latest season which I'm not as in love with everybody else in, because it starts off with a thing that I'm like, well, that's just not possible. Like, that just won't work. And then I watch, well, I mean, it's Black Museum, you know, and and, you know, it's, I mean, literally it starts with putting the tiny little solar panels on the back of the car to charge the electric car.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know I'm science fiction and I get it, but that one, that won't work. And the problem is people are stupid enough to think, why don't I do this? And you're like, and it's a tiny, that didn't throw it. I'm like, all right. I mean, that's this. Okay. If we just put these solar panels, like, it doesn't matter how efficient those solar panels, not enough sun to hit that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't care. How's the story? But then I watched each one of those elements was like magical. And I'm like, this character's got to be Satan, because this is not a human that has access to this magical sort of thing. And then we get to come up and so I'm like,
it really does. That particular episode ends up reading like something wicked this way comes, like, you know, he's like, you know, oh, what a menagerie of troubled individuals I have.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, it's when it goes to where it goes. I'm so detached from reality and what's real. Like, I don't know. Anyhow, funny thing. When that started, he looked at the museum and he looked at the protagonist, and we won't do any spoilers there, but who did he remind you of?
I think I know the punchline on this, but it looked as though this was written for Penn Jillette, and then it found out that it was written by, part of it was written by Penn Jillette.
Well, he dressed like he had the rolled up shirt, the vest, the tie, there was the tile, all these sort of iconic sort of Penn and Teller sort of things. And when he in philosophy, he looked, I'm like, this feels like a Penn and Teller thing. You know, like, this feels like a Penn and Teller. Looks like a Penn and Teller thing. At the end, one of the stories was based on a story by Penn. And I'm like, this is hilarious. Because I'm like, man, I just got a weird Penn and Teller vibe. And,
yep. No, well, I did the exact same thing.
He allegedly, like, wanted to play the role initially. Oh. He said on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. And it wind up, like, it, but didn't come to fruition. But, and he was happy that the guy that got it. Got it, because he said he did a better job, but I remember seeing something on Twitter with him.
Interesting.
One last thing on Electric Dreams, and, you know, I would say give it two episodes, because I think the first two episodes kind of give you two kind of different takes, but if only to see the episode with, I don't want to spoil who it is, but there's an episode where there's a robotic and a human. Humanoid android woman, and it is maybe the most perfect casting of anybody I have ever seen ever.
Wow!
It's great. She's the perfect person for it. But it's kind of cool, and I think especially if you are not used to Philip K. Dick's stories, I think you will actually probably get even more enjoyment out of it as someone who's like read a good amount of Philip K. Dick's short stories and some of his books. I was like, yeah, that's how these go. That's the twist. There it is. There's the second twist. There, right on time. But it's cool. Also, half of it takes place in Chicago. If it takes place on Earth, it pretty much takes place in Chicago. And I didn't get that until the very end, which is kind of another weird thing.
But too bad this is after things. real quick, my pick is, I've said this before, say it again, The Attention Merchants by Tim Wu, which I thought was a really, really well done book. And again, we live in a incredible age of possibility and potential. And advertising, things like this, essential. This is part of it. And people are like, meh, you know, like, it's capitalism. Like, yeah, go look at the propaganda in, you know, North Korea, socialist countries, things like that. And tell me how you feel about that. The choice is that comes to here is we have to make these decisions for us. Or we can say, let the government do it. Then you are basically saying let politicians do it and people who have their own interests. It's
It's a random side jag that we will not have time to discuss, but holy crap. Yeah. The rumors of just like, let's just nationalize 5G. It seems like a good idea.
We have no idea where it started from or what it was for, though. It was like, sure. It was just like a PowerPoint president. So
here's what happens. Axios last night leaks that there's national security PowerPoint that they have about 5G. There's even questions on exactly what the intention was there. Was it a security thing? Is it a national security thing? Like, but it has been not only distanced by the Trump White House itself, but also by the FCC. So it seems like it was a thing that was thought about that. I mean, if it was something that like Donald Trump came out during the State of the Union and said, this is happening, would have a very long road to hoe for it to be a thing. So I think I think it wound up capturing everybody's attention because it was so. It's like such a weird, like, where do you even put that on the political compass kind of idea?
Well, and you, if we saw there are thousands of PowerPoint presentations, you know, put together by people who are working for the assistant to so-and-so, this council, whatever, this kind of thing. And some of them leaked before and you see this sort of like, you know, how you would attack Russia. I'm like, oh, my God, there are plans to attack. Well, one, you know, they got plans. They should have this stuff. And I think it's like, yeah, this sounds like a dumb idea, but it's like. Yeah, the isn't whether or not dumb ideas come up. It's do the dumb ideas die? And this one was quickly like no. So anyhow, but panic. Anyhow, but you know we can discuss the merits of it next time. Thank you for joining us on After Things. It's been After.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.